are going to speak in English. I hope it will be convenient for Polish citizens as well. First of all, thank you very much for inviting us here. We want to say thank you for Paweł Krupa for helping us to organize this event, and we want to say thank you to Krzysztof and Lidia Jaskłowski for hosting us, and also for all the help and support we got from them. And thank you for Dom Polski for hosting our event. My name is Adela.
My name is Krzysztof Chris.
And as Paweł already said, we've been cycling around the world since 5 years. We are the first Polish couple on the quest to cycle the world. And we want to share with you our adventures and our life, because it's already life on two wheels. We would love to speak together, but Chris has to manage the changing of the photos. So, at the beginning, we want to show you some numbers. As we already said, 5 years on the road, we've covered 4 continents, 30 countries, over 27,000 miles. And we plan to return to Poland in 2020, so we are about halfway, more or less. Here you can see the map. The green line is what we have already covered. The blue line is a flight. And the red line is what is still missing. You can see there is a little bit more of red than green, so we wish to speed up a little bit in order to really return in 2020. So as you can see, we started in Turkey and we went through Middle East, through Syria, Lebanon and Jordan, and we entered Africa in Egypt, and we cycled the entire length of Africa. And from South Africa we took a flight to Buenos Aires, we went down to Patagonia, to Tierra del Fuego, and up through South and Central America, and now we're heading to Alaska. And from there we want to take a flight somewhere to Asia, we don't know yet exactly where. And then you can see still there's a lot of places missing, Australia, New Zealand, and somehow through India back home, and Europe will be the cream of the cake. As I said, 5 years on the way, it's really like living, it's sort of a lifestyle now. And we are carrying basically our houses on two wheels. Sorry that we don't have our bikes with us today. People very often ask, what do we have with us? As I said, it's a miniature of the house, so we have a wardrobe, like a pannier with clothes. We have a kitchen where we carry a small stove and all the cutlery and condiments and food. We have an office where we carry our computer and some documents. And
workshop,
yeah, thank you. With all tools and... The weight, it's 110 pounds. This is the minimum weight, the usual weight. Sometimes it goes up to 80 kilos, which is 160 pounds. All depends how much of food and water we have to carry with us. And now we want to share with you a little bit about our life on two wheels. So cycling around the world would have been very easy if the roads would be always as smooth and flat as this one in Sudan. Unfortunately, cycling around the world includes quite a lot of pushing as well. Here we were pushing our bikes 7 days, and we covered 120 kilometers, which is 70 miles maybe. But these are the extreme situations, fortunately not too often. And the water is a big issue in our trip, as we cannot carry more water than for 3 days. We have to plan always to reach somewhere within 3 days where there would be a water. But sometimes the abundance of water also makes our trip complicated. In fact, there in Kenya, where we were pushing our bikes for 7 days, we were so worried about the water. And there came the first rain in 2 years. And you can see the level of the river was very high. And we were already a week eating just corn flour and onions. We didn't have anything else. And we were so depressed when locals told us that we'll have to wait a week until the water will come down. And that time we were traveling also with another Polish guy, Rafael, and he was like an hour ahead of us. So we texted him, "Rafael, where is the bridge, or how did you cross the river?" And he said, "Guys, an hour ago there wasn't any river, I'm drinking a beer for your health." Fortunately, the next day water was down. Here is another example of too much water on our way. Sometimes we had to wait 3 days for the mud to dry down. It's sort of dry on this photo. And sometimes we have great distances. Like in Sudan, we had about 300 kilometers, 280 kilometers from one oasis to another oasis, which in miles is a lot. So here we had we were carrying 30 liters of water each, which is, I don't know, in gallons, like 8 gallons of water maybe. And we can carry food for 1 week and water for 3 days. So the water is the biggest concern normally. And another factor that complicates our trip sometimes is the wind. The strongest winds we had in Patagonia and in Oregon as well. It was quite strong headwind. And this is an incredible experience because we realize how small we are. I mean, in this universe that we are just so tiny, when we are confronted with this incredible force of nature, I've never experienced this in a so-called normal life. I don't know what is normal anymore. being on the bike, we are so vulnerable. And also we were caught by some sandstorms on the way, which was also, it was the first time in my life I realized that I'm just like so insignificant, like a grain of the sand. And also being 5 years on the way, it's been inevitable to cross some snowy passes, and we had already 4 winters on the way. Fortunately, only one in Patagonia was so tough. And very often people ask, how do we find our way? usually it's not that difficult, but sometimes we have to throw the coin. Here we took to the right. But we don't carry a GPS, and we don't trust too much in the modern inventions, especially 5 years ago. Many countries that we crossed, they weren't even covered by Google map. So we trust in paper map and compass. And we ask locals. And here we, at the beginning, we were young and not very humble. So we thought we know more than locals. So here in Egypt, we asked Bedouins about the road, and we looked at our map and it was showing the asphalt road, and they said, no guys, it's only a camel track. And we thought, these Bedouins, they don't know how to read the map. In our European German made map, it's showing asphalt, so they must be wrong. And a couple of kilometers later we realized that there is no asphalt. But still, we thought we are smarter than locals, and we thought, oh, okay, but still we can cycle. But in 2 kilometers later, it turned in a real camel track. And it took us 7 hours to cover 3 kilometers. because we had to take our panniers out of the bikes, carry bikes over boulders, and there was a very steep cliff. And also there were plenty of camels passing by, so we had to like go to the wall and let the camels to pass by. So I'm very happy that we got this lesson at the beginning of the trip, to be more humble and listen what the locals have to say. And we get very often the question, how do we cross the borders? Normally it's very easy, we just show our passport, we get stamps, and here we are just crossing the border. But sometimes some borders are very demanding. Here we were crossing a border between Tanzania and Mozambique. And again on our map, it was shown that there is a ferry. And when we reached the village, they were like, no ferry, no boat, no bridge, my friend, mister. Okay. So we had to go around the village and bargain with the fishermen, because obviously they knew that we have no choice. So first the price was out of the blue, and it took a couple of hours to find a man. And we took this small boat, and believe me or not, but our two loaded bikes were inside, two of us and four of these guys. So the level of the water was like less than an inch from the edge of the boat. And it was one of the scariest moments of this trip, because I wasn't really sure if we would reach the shore. And one might ask why to suffer many harsh conditions, why to push bikes through desolated places, why suffer the cold and heat. And the answer are people, the incredible people that we can meet on the way. And the bicycle gives us an incredible opportunity, because we are not protected with any walls. We are exposed to all the nature factors, and we are also, we depend from people. We have to ask them every day about directions, water, and we have a great experience, and the bike gives us the freedom that we can reach the places where you cannot reach by car. And being among the people is one of the most important and the best experiences of this trip. And also traveling by bike, we have a great opportunity to break many stereotypes. Like one of them is hunger in Africa. In 15 months, we haven't seen any starving child. I'm not saying that there aren't any. I'm just saying that personally, in 15 months, we haven't seen any. Here you can see all the happy folk. They don't have shoes. Maybe so many people think, oh, they are poor because they don't have shoes. What we found out, they have shoes. They just find them very uncomfortable. They get them from NGOs or from church. So when the priest is around, they would put them. But it's just a different culture. It's not the poverty. And also the incredible experience we have, we can learn a lot from local people, and we can learn about their cultures. And the great thing we learn is that every custom, no matter how strange it might look to us or how weird, because it's different, has some practical explanation in the background. For example, this is a Turkana tribe in Kenya, and they have beads on their necks, and people think, oh, it's very cruel because their neck goes longer. In fact, not the neck doesn't go longer, the shoulders are getting lower. But what is why they have it? They used to have a lot of lions in this area, so the beads, the lion always attacks the throat as the first place. That was their way of protection, because if they were in the group and there was somebody with a Spire?
Yeah.
Spear. They had a chance to chase the lion away before the lion will kill a person. Now they don't. They managed to kill lions before lions kill them, so they don't have lions around. But the custom carries on, and also the colors, they have meaning. So, for example, the girl to the right, I don't remember which color exactly the order, but what we were told that the colors she has, they show that she is a virgin, she is ready to be married, she's after the first menstruation. So it makes life easier. The guy looks from far away, okay, I can try or better not. And the other lady, these, they show how her social level in the village, how many goats she has, how many children. So it's whole social code. But still the most incredible encounter on the way we had with the Hamer tribe in Ethiopia. We didn't expect to meet them. Well, in fact, we thought that we will not meet any tribal people because we learned that, I'm sure you heard about people who have a big wooden plate in their lips, and we just heard that hordes of tourists and journalists, they come to the village, they pay them $100 for filming rights, and we just thought maybe it's not the purpose of, we just didn't want to participate in this, so we choose another road, and by surprise, suddenly these women came out from the bushes. And you can imagine, I mean, we were like UFO for them in our sunglasses, helmets, with our bikes. And we were like 5 minutes staring at each other. We were afraid to move. They were afraid to move. We didn't know really what to do. And after 5 minutes, we behaved like tourists. We took photos. But and a couple of miles later, we met a British guy who decided to live with this tribe. So we had a great chance to learn, because otherwise we would have had just a photo. And he explained to us that you can see that they still live very, they are very connected to the nature still. They have everything handmade. Their clothes are from animal leather, and only shoes are coming from another tribe that they trade with them. The shoes are made from car tires. So when we were cycling, we saw these strange footprints that have this mark, like the car, but the shape of a human feet, and we were very like wondering what's. Then we found out that these are their shoes. And what's very interesting about this tribe is that women are hunting. Women, they construct houses, they take care of children, they cook, they carry water. So we were wondering what men do. And we thought that they just make children and that's their only duty in the village. But then, and Chris was even like, oh, we should stay here, I like this culture. But then we found out that they suffer, every year they suffer a seasonal drought, where men, they take their cows and the cattle and they migrate to the places where there is still grass. And they, very often they disappear for about 3 months. And in this journey, they don't eat much. Mainly they open veins of their cows. The way that they don't kill them, but the blood is dripping and they milk their cows to the cup where they have the blood. And that's their main nutrition, the blood mixed with the milk. And they know some spots where wild bees, they steal the honey from wild bees. So when that's why women, they have to know how to do everything around the village, because they're not sure when the men will be back and they're alone with children and the elderly. And you can see that the lady on the on your right, she has some red color on her head. They mix red clay with some essential oils and herbs and cover their hair and skin to repel insects. And one of the most interesting thing I found there is that very often we think that in the society where we live, we think that some things are normal and some things are not normal because our society thinks like this. And in this tribe, the female breast, as longer it is, the more respect a woman gains in her tribe, because it shows that she fed many children. So I was very disrespected there, because they considered me very old and with no children. And one woman, she came to me, she grabbed me, and then she spit it on the ground, very disgusted. And they were like, like pointing at me. But it's very interesting, the different concept, because in Europe, as higher the breast, the more the I know, the more beautiful it is. And like you can see the woman on the left, she has the long breast, and we saw young women tearing, they're pulling their breast to have it longer, although they still don't have children. It's just that the breast doesn't have any sexual meaning, it's just for feeding children. And also we've been told, we are not sure if they were joking or not, but they said that if the breast is very long and women, they carry their children on the back, they can just like put the back and keep working, and they can feed their child without breaking their work. I'm not sure if it's possible, but that's what they said. I'm not sure if it was a joke. They were serious on their faces. And another great part of our life on two wheels, a part of cycling, fighting with wind, pushing and meeting great cultures is camping. We carry our house with us, our tent. We don't sleep in two separate tents. It was just one Chilean guy who was traveling with us. But the tent gives us a great sense of freedom, because wherever we are, we just set up our house. And there we are, like here in Rio de Janeiro, we put our tent on the main beach in the city. And here we had our five-star Bella Vista house on the beachfront. And the most incredible, nice, we had on old deserts that we crossed here in the Nubian Desert in Sudan. And it's I would never ever change my tent for any five-star hotel. It's just so incredible when we are there alone and the sky is so dark without any light pollution and the stars are sort of raising from the horizon to horizon, and it's just an incredible feeling to be at home wherever we are. Just we put this piece of material and there we are at home. Well, sometimes it's nicer to be really at home than in our home, like here in Sierra Nevada in the USA. But also it's very nice to come out and see snow around and have a cozy place to a shelter. And also camping wild gives us a great opportunity to be close to animals, like an elephant that came in Zimbabwe. You can see a wet t-shirt, I was brushing my teeth, and Chris said, don't move too much, but look behind. And there was an elephant just passing by, and we had many times animals around, and hyenas, and how is hippopotam in English?
Hippopotam.
Hippo, and it would be too many adventures to talk about. But also, we never know where we're gonna sleep unless we have great hosts like now we have. Normally, we just, when it's getting dark, we look around and we sneak into the bushes. And what I love about this uncertainty, used in English, that we have great experiences. Like when we were pushing our bikes on the camel track, it started to get dark, and one Bedouin, he approached us and he said, if you want, you can sleep in our camp. So we ended up in Bedouin's camp with 50 camels, and they made fire and baked bread for us and made tea, and they were singing their songs, and we stayed a couple of days with them, and we had a night ride on their camels, and great experiences that if we would have stayed in the hotel, we wouldn't have this experience. And in this trip, we experienced an incredible hospitality. We hear in news always about bad guys, terrorists, robbers, criminals, but we don't hear about this normal good people that are everywhere around us. Here in Mozambique, we were invited, Chris got malaria, and we were invited by a family to stay with them. And they were so hospitable that they offered us their bed, and they said that they're gonna sleep on the floor. So we couldn't accept it, as we have our house, and we convinced them that we will sleep in our tent. And once our tent was set up, we saw them in the night dragging out some things and putting them on the floor. And then we realized that they're going to sleep outside. So we asked them, like, why are you going to sleep outside? And they said, no, you are our guest, and if you sleep outside, we have to sleep outside as well. And, you know, like, I think this helped Chris to recover quickly, because we had a sort of mosquito net in our tent, so we were sleeping quite well, and we heard them all night killing mosquitoes. In 5 days, Chris was ready to go. And what is also what we learned by staying there, the first night, the man, head of the family, he told me, tomorrow I will come back at this time. And was just pointing somewhere in the dark. I was wondering, like, okay, this time, I don't know, what does it mean? But then, then he came in the morning, he pointed at the shade of the palm tree, and he said, I told you I'll come back at this time. And then we realized that they're happy people who live without watches. They just have this sort of a solar clock that regulates their circle of life. So Chris, the second day, he was sick in the tent. The second day, he already knew everything. He was telling me, okay, the shade is there, so now the neighbor will come. Now the women will go to bring water. Now they will start preparing their food. So it was an incredible experience. And what I said about the bad guys that we hear only about, we have the opposite experience. We've never met terrorists, and we're also influenced by medias in our country, and we thought, okay, in Arabic countries we'll have some problems, people will throw stones at me because I'm not Muslim, but traveling and looking at the world with our own eyes completely broke the stereotypes. For example, here in Egypt, we found a spot of Sahara Desert, and we put up our tent, and suddenly three men appeared with guns, and they said, you cannot sleep here. And we're like, are we invading your land, or what's the problem? And they were keeping saying that it's very dangerous, and we cannot stay there, and like, no, no, it's not dangerous, and they show like, but still our tent was ready, and we were very tired, and we convinced them that we want to stay. So they left, and we thought, okay, good, we can go to sleep. And after like 30 minutes, they came back on donkeys. They were carrying blankets and a teapot and this mats. And they said, okay, if you don't want to come to our house, our wives, they got very angry that we left you, and we have to guard you, you can go to sleep and we will protect you. And imagine that they were sitting all night around the fire, awake, drinking their tea, just making sure that we will have a safe night. And they said that they spoke to their village board and they said they will never forgive themselves if something happens to us while we are just at the border of their village. But still the most remarkable night we spent in the prison. Voluntarily in Paraguay, we couldn't find any place that wouldn't have any fence, and we didn't want to trespass people's land. So we approached the police station and we asked if we can, they had a nice lawn in front, so we asked if we can put our tent on their lawn. And they said, yeah, you can, but you know, we have a nice place with bed and shower, and you can use it. So we thought, okay. He showed us a prison. And we said, oh, you know, our village is so quiet. We, since many years, we didn't have anybody here. We don't expect any visitors. So go ahead, you can occupy.
W imieniu Radia Wisła gratuluję Wam, kochani, wspaniałej podróży, wspaniałych, cudownych widoków, które oglądacie. I mam takie pytanie. Czy mieliście w czasie swojej podróży moment, kiedy powiedzieliście nie, dosyć, już mamy dosyć, wracamy, nie jedziemy dalej?
Nie. Jeszcze w tej podróży pięcioletniej nie było takiego momentu.
Poważnie,
ponieważ codziennie spotykamy wspaniałych ludzi na swojej drodze. Codziennie przeżywamy zachwyt nad światem, przyrodą. I nawet jak mieliśmy cięższe momenty, jakieś chwile, to zawsze się zjawiali wspaniali ludzie wokół, którzy jednak upewniali nas w tym, że świat jest miejscem wspaniałym i nie, jakieś przeszkody są tylko pewnymi lekcjami, które trzeba po prostu przerobić i iść dalej, tak jak w normalnym życiu, tak samo w tej podróży.
Czyli to był pomysł, że zaczynamy podróż. I właśnie, dlaczego właśnie rower?
Pomysł bardzo... Ja poznam rowerzystę z Polski, który miał takie marzenie, żeby objechać świat rowerem i on zainspirował mnie do tego, że rzeczywiście w ogóle wziąłem pod uwagę rower jako środek transportu. Nigdy o tym nie myślałam.
A czy w ogóle właśnie jeździła pani?
Nie. Nie w ogóle. Nie lubiłam jazdy na rowerze. Nudził mnie rower. Także nie spodziewałam się, że mogę odnaleźć w tym spełnienie marzenia i że mogę zobaczyć świat z perspektywy roweru. Teraz bym nie zamieniła tego na żaden inny środek transportu. Może grzbiet koński byłby jakąś alternatywą. Rower daje poczucie wolności. Można dostać się w miejsca, do których by się nie dostało pieszo ani samochodem. Rower pozwala spotkać się z ludźmi. No i też pewien aspekt też zachowania zdrowia.
Jakimi jeszcze środkami lokomocji poruszacie się oprócz roweru?
No musieliśmy przelecieć samolotem przez Atlantyk. Byliśmy statkami, promami, rybackimi, łodziami. I w zasadzie to wszystko.
No cóż, serdecznie dziękuję za krótką rozmowę i życzę Wam wspaniałej podróży i mam nadzieję, że może nie za rok, ale wrócicie jeszcze do Seattle.
Również bardzo dziękujemy za rozmowę. Przy okazji chcieliśmy pozdrowić wszystkich rodaków na świecie, na naszej trasie, których w każdym kraju spotkaliśmy, Polaków. Mamy wielkie wsparcie. ze strony Polonii i bardzo dziękujemy za spotkanie w Seattle i również mamy nadzieję, że kiedyś tu wrócimy.
Dziękuję serdecznie.
Dziękuję.